Coming up on Chasing the Natty, week 11 is done and gone, so now we turn our heads towards the playoffs. I've got a couple of players that will be giving a score on the freakout scale prior to the playoffs, and then we'll discuss those players to add that could prove pivotal in these final 3 weeks of the CFF season. All of that and more coming right after this.
Sellers picks his way to the right and is tripped up, reaching for the end zone. Touchdown! What a start!
Give it to Reed, and there he goes! Nobody's gonna catch him! Touchdown!
It's caught! Jeremiah Smith! Touchdown, Ohio State! The legend grows!
This is Chasing the Natty, a college fantasy football podcast.
All right, welcome in everyone. This is Jared Palmgren, host of the Chasing the Natty podcast. I hope you guys are having a wonderful ride to your work on this Monday morning. We are the College Fantasy Football Podcast on the Campus of Canton Podcast Network. You can find us on all of your podcast feeds and on YouTube every Monday morning and Tuesday night during the season. If you want to support the great work we do here, head on over to campusofcanton.com. Subscribe there with any of our phenomenal tiers. We got content ranging on all sorts of college football games, whether it is CFF, Devy, C2C, College DFS, Underdog Best Ball. If you play it, then we've got content, whether that's tools, rankings, pretty much everything that you need to succeed. In fact, right now, if you want to support this show even further, make sure when you sign up for one of our yearly membership tiers, use that promo code NATTY, N-A-T-T-Y, to get 10% off your yearly membership. Again, that is promo code NATTY, N-A-T-T-Y. If you can't do that, you can just show us some love by leaving a like, a comment, and subscribe on the YouTube side of things. If you're on the podcast side of things, love you over there as well. And you can just leave a 5-star review and make sure you're following the show. Not only does that show us support, but also the entire game of college fantasy football in general, a ton of support. If you want to ask any further questions or just want to get in touch for whatever reason, you can find me in the show on Twitter. I am at CFF underscore Jared. The show is at Chasing the Natty. And y'all, I feel like I start every one of these shows off pretty much the exact same way. Let's hit all the check marks. Wow, I can't believe we're this far into the season. We only got 3 weeks left. Playoffs are here already. Yeah, I don't really know what else to say at this point in terms of just kind of setting the stage outside of just we're here. I know that there are a lot of leagues that only have four teams make the playoff, and so therefore you got another week of your regular season. That's all fine and dandy, but for most leagues, especially bigger leagues, like this is the start of playoffs. This is like true, like heart of playoff conversation and you know, discussion, waiver wire pickups, really all that. I've said it for a while, it's do or die time, right? As you're trying to get into the playoffs, but now quite literally it is win or go home for a lot of you guys. And so we got to make sure we make the right choices. So as we always do here, I will get to plenty of waiver wire pickups for this week. We also got a couple of freakout scale. We are returning that this week. I messed up, didn't do it last week, even though I said I would. But we got that back this week, and we got a couple of quarterbacks that players are, you know, a little hesitant after the last couple of weeks have not been super great for them. We'll discuss whether or not they're worth starting going into the playoffs. But another major way that you can get prepared for the CFF playoffs is our new rest of season rankings over at campusofcanton.com. They're under the CFF tab there. Those are mine. They're mostly, again, algorithmic with some kind of hand fudging here and there, but they do provide you a really good idea of viewing players rest of season in two different ways, right? You got the total points, which is, you know, if you just want to grab a player that is going to play all 3 weeks and that's what matters to you, that's fine and dandy. You don't want to be somebody who's having, you know, grabbing guys off the bench. You want guys that you feel good about that are going to be starting for you all three of the playoff weeks. You can look at it that way. If you're somebody who's okay with kind of, you know, doing a lot of lineup changes and pulling guys off your bench and everything, you don't really care if a guy plays or not, and you just want to know when he plays, is he going to score me points? You can also look at it from that perspective, right? They are ranked both in total points and rest of season fantasy points per game. So you can take a look at it. That the rankings include the top 60 quarterbacks in total points, 72 running backs, 84 wide receivers, and 36 tight ends. For now, again, next year, I think I am going to expand that. If I can get them to a point where I feel really good about a lot of the guys further down the list. And then in addition, if you're kind of wondering about some of these guys, right? Like I know a guy that a lot of people were kind of worried about coming into this week was Robert Henry, right? Obviously not on a great skid recently. And you're kind of wondering like, oh, is there a possibility of a bounce back? Well, you can take a look at our fantasy points per game, both in terms of what he has done so far and what he's going to do rest of the season. You can get an idea of, all right, is a bounce back possible here or not? Things like that. Again, go check them out, campusagain.com. Again, they're over there on the CFF tab. They update. Really, you can get basically a rough draft of them after Sunday nights, because I do my work ahead of time on Sunday, so you'll see kind of an early version. But really, Monday night is the best time to check it, because that's when a lot of the stats that come from external sources are updated by that point, and it'll give you the best view possible. Although, again, if you were to check like Monday morning, you would still see a pretty solid look at what to expect down the line. So, all that being said, go check that out. Enough of my spiel on that, but it is something I'm proud of, something I'm very excited about. So go check it out. I think it can help you guys out a lot. And I got people asking me in our Discord all the time, asking me like, what do you think of this guy rest of the season? Like, should I trade for him? That kind of stuff, which to me is kind of wild that some of y'all are still trading at this point in the season. Like, trading in the midst of playoffs is very wild to me. But again, I don't commission every league and I don't want to. So with all that being said, again, we got a good show ahead today. Again, let's go ahead and return over to the freakout scale. Return to the freakout scale after a couple of weeks absence here, and we're going to discuss two quarterbacks here that were chosen by our NIL tier over at campusdecanton.com. Again, they help me out with this every single week to kind of give me a pulse on who people are worried about. And the two quarterbacks we'll be discussing today are Damon Williams, quarterback out of Washington, and Parker Navarro out of Ohio. That's the state that I was looking for. For some reason, that was just not coming to mind. So we'll start with Damon Williams. And Damon Williams has been on a real up and down case recently, right? Nearly 50 points versus Rutgers. That was phenomenal. Follows that up with a 6-point performance versus Michigan. Illinois, he gets 33.8 points. And then against Wisconsin, just an absolute stinker from Washington all around, in the cold, in the snow. He gets 15.46 fantasy points in that game for 4-point passing touchdown leagues. It's leaving a lot of people wondering, will the real Damon Williams stand up? And based on, if you're on YouTube, you can already see where our scores are. Nate and Chris K are both at a 1, which, again, a quick reminder, since we haven't done this in a couple of weeks, 1, the free guess goes a scale of 1 to 10. 1 is start with confidence, don't even worry about it. 10 is drop that fool. Both Nate and Chris K are at a 1. They're not worried about this at all. They view the Michigan and Wisconsin games as kind of flukish, and that Damon Williams will be back on his stuff here soon. And it makes sense, right? Damon Williams, QB23 so far. You've been relying on him to this point so far. I think you can continue to rely on him. My projections, he is QB26 in my rest of season rankings in terms of total points, QB36 in terms of fantasy points per game. So by no means like a league winner by any stretch, but definitely somebody that is startable every single week. Like his fantasy points per game expected rest of the season here is 22.9 fantasy points per game. For comparison, that's just under 2 points lower than what he has scored so far this season. And quite frankly, a lot of that has to do with his matchup against Oregon at the end of the season. Meanwhile, his games against Purdue and UCLA, very much, very much startable spots. I would for sure the Purdue matchup this upcoming weekend, I would say, is very good. UCLA, it is on the road, but it is on the West Coast, which For those of you that didn't catch Nate Marquise's tweet earlier, he was pointing out that a lot of Damon Williams's trouble comes from when he is traveling east of the Rocky Mountains, right? In his three games, having to go on the road to the East Coast here, or well, the eastern side of the United States, those three games have been Wisconsin, Michigan, and Maryland. He's averaged 13 fantasy points per game in those matchups. He has a 3-5 touchdown interception ratio, 9 sacks for 67 yards. He's just struggled when he's had to go long distances on the road. And so, as Nate points out, the good news is he doesn't have to do that the rest of the year. Purdue, at home. UCLA, on the West Coast. Oregon, at home. That helps him out a ton. I mentioned earlier that Nate and Chris are both ones. They think Damon Williams is startable in pretty much every matchup going forward. I'm at a 3. Mostly looking at that Oregon matchup. One, Oregon's defense, pretty dang solid, right? I don't care that it's at home. That's going to be a tough out no matter what. My projections have it there as well with 13.4 fantasy points. And you might be saying that that might be a little harsh, but Williams started against Oregon last year and only scored 13.74 fantasy points. So it's not, this is not outside the realm of possibility at all. We literally have seen this happen before. So I personally am of the opinion that Purdue, UCLA, totally startable, totally good. I'm okay with those starts. Oregon, I would be looking for a potential backup in those scenarios. So otherwise, yeah, Damon Williams should be great. Again, he's top 24 QB on the year. He should be fine here in the playoffs as well. Parker Navarro, we're singing just a little bit of a different tune. Parker Navarro, quarterback out of Ohio, you know, QB 36 on the year so far. Chris K a little higher at 3. Nate and I even higher at a 5. 5 is for Nate and I. You should be looking for a backup plan at quarterback, and we'll get to some of those options on the waiver wire for sure. Take a look at your bench, see if you got some better startable options going forward, because I'm not as, you know, bullish on Navarro going forward here. You know, again, we take a look at my projections with my rest of season rankings here. I've got Navarro at QB 32 in terms of total points, QB 44 in rest of season fantasy points per game, which is 21.33 fantasy points per game. So that's, you know, again, a startable option and a little bit lower than what he's had to this point. But when you break it down by game, both the matchup against Western Michigan and Buffalo, my projections are looking at him hitting sub 20 points in those games. So I personally am saying, like, we should definitely move away from that. That matchup, week 13 against UMass, golden. Great. Love that matchup. Navarro should be a fine start there. But I think even to this point in the season, I think a lot of people are still kind of holding on to what Navarro was last year. And let's take a look at what made him so great last year, and that was his rushing floor, right? 4 of his last 5 games, he had 100-plus rushing yards. He did it 6 total times on the year last year for Ohio. This year, hasn't hit 100 rushing yards once. They have dialed back his rushing quite a bit. A lot of that has to do with Siya Bangura, but also they had Anthony Tyus last year, so you can't fully blame, you know, Siya Bangura going off to this point. So yeah, I'm at a 5. I think Navarro, not that Western Michigan game, I would not start him at all. Again, on the road, Western Michigan loves to get into low scoring dogfights with every MAC team that it's with. I think Ohio will be sucked into that as well. And then you can maybe convince me that he could be an okay start against Buffalo. Again, my projections don't love it, but I can see that being okay, because Buffalo's defense has been very Jekyll and Hyde so far this season, so they could be one of those matchups where Ohio does kind of catch them off guard. But again, I would be looking for a backup option for sure. So with that being said, that's enough of the freakout scale. Let's go ahead and start talking about these waiver wire options for this week. Some of you might be wondering, to this point in the season, what the heck is even available on the waiver market at this point? And quite frankly, it's not more of the same. I don't want to say that, because that makes it sound like that none of these guys are really worth adding or anything like that. But like, it's been the case the last couple of weeks. There's a lot of players still available that have been discussed in previous weeks. That hasn't really changed, and that applies to all major positions this week. Just once again, when we get to the honorable mentions, make sure you're paying attention to that as well, because a lot of those guys are on the same level, if not better, than the guys I'm featuring. The guys I feature, I want to be new names that I bring to you, but again, please pay attention to those names I bring up during the honorable mentions section. Speaking of the featured guys, I should go ahead and tease kind of what we're looking at there. Quarterback, I got some apologizing to do because we have two quarterbacks that I have not been too kind towards that I'm actually going to recommend here for this last season stretch. At running back, we got another strong group of late-breaking guys here, which is really, really strange. Like, running back is typically not something we tend to see this late in the season. Even this year, by the time we got to mid-season, there weren't really a lot of running backs jumping out at us as, like, clear ads. That's not the case here towards the end. I see a lot of running backs that are pretty available right now. So if you've been struggling in that position, definitely some guys to pick up here. And then a wide receiver, I mentioned earlier, honorable mentions, very important. That might be no more important than at the wide receiver position. We'll actually cover the honorable mentions first in the wide receiver position just because there are so many good names still available from previous weeks. But don't worry, there is some fresh meat to sink your teeth into, especially if you're in a league where a lot of those guys are already taken, even if they're sub 30% on Fantrax, right? So, and don't worry, tight end truthers. We do have a tight end to feature this week. This isn't like 2 weeks ago where I was just throwing my hands up being like, I don't know who to add. There's a pretty clear ad from a certain school in the Northeast that we will discuss here today. So with that being said, let us hop in over to our first quarterback of the day, and that is going to be Ashton Daniels, quarterback out of Auburn. Went 31 for 44 this past week for 353 yards, 2 touchdowns through the air, as well as 18 rushing attempts for 89 yards and 2 touchdowns on the ground. Rostered in 5% of leagues. Man, wow, I knew Hugh Freeze was a problem for this Auburn offense. It was really holding them back, but like, I didn't think it was this much of an issue. Like, after Freeze's firing, I really thought that Auburn's team was going to, you know, be one of those that really mails it in the rest of the season. Maybe they get up for the Iron Bowl. But instead, we get this offensive explosion against Vanderbilt, right? Like, 38 points. I just read off Ashton Daniels' stats. 4 touchdowns for him. 353 passing yards. Just absolutely insane. Granted, you know, Vanderbilt's secondary has kind of been picked on all season, but I was not really sitting here thinking that Auburn had shown any ability to take advantage of a weakness like that. Well, here we are. They proved me wrong and everyone else, because like I said, they put up 38 points against Vanderbilt in regulation. They forced overtime. And again, all the more shocking was the fact that Ashton Daniels was the engine behind this offensive explosion. Yes, that Ashton Daniels, the one from Stanford that was, you know, not great there, and pretty much everybody left for dead as soon as he joined a quarterback room with, you know, Jackson Arnold probably going to be the starter, and, you know, Deuce Knight sitting behind him. We all thought that that was the end of Daniels. He'll go grab his Auburn degree and ride off into the sunset. Yeah, no, that's not what he did at all, and he's actually here, you know, putting up a great performance. Again, 43 fantasy points and 4-point passing touchdown leagues. There's really not much else to say outside of just, wow, I didn't know he had this in him. Like, granted, Stanford's not really been a good team to play for, but nothing in the games that I saw Daniels in at Stanford really made me believe that he could put up a performance like this, let alone on the road in the SEC. And yes, before you guys sit there and mock me, Vanderbilt is a pretty solid, like, road game this year for the SEC. It's not your typical Vanderbilt year where the opposing team's fans come in and take over. So, yeah, like, this is Daniel's job at Auburn going forward. Sorry, Jackson Arnold fans and Jackson Arnold himself, but I don't think that this will be changing the rest of this season. And, yeah, best of luck to Jackson Arnold at South Alabama next year. As of right now, Daniels is that guy. So, what can we expect rest of season, right? Very easy for somebody to come in and say, like, yeah, this was a fluke. We're not getting out of this, or we're not going to get this out of Daniels the rest of this year. And quite frankly, I don't fully disagree, you know, especially a performance of this degree. But, you know, after the bye week, Daniels will have to face Mercer, which is an FCS opponent, much to the chagrin of a lot of the college football world. But, you know, normally I would worry about, you know, an early sit, you know, comes in, puts up some points, you know, Jeremiah Cobb scores 2 touchdowns, Daniels could have a pretty rough day. But I really do think that this is one of those places where this interim staff is going to want Daniels to get as many reps as he can against the Iron Bowl. And so I think he'll start a lot more of the game than we initially think. And then you get the Iron Bowl. And Iron Bowl is their last game of the season, as every Auburn fan knows. And, you know, starting a quarterback against Bama's D is already going to be a tough out. I wouldn't recommend it. But, you know, if you're in a tough spot and Daniels is now your starting quarterback for your team going forward, we know how weird those Iron Bowls can be, right? So, personally, as of right now, I'd grab Daniels as a fun semifinal spot start if you need it. Otherwise, you can ride with some of the other quarterbacks out there, including one JC French, quarterback out of Georgia Southern. Passed 37 times, completed 27 of them for 352 yards and a touchdown. He also ran the ball 12 times for 18 yards and a touchdown. Another quarterback that I owe an apology to, because I was not too kind to JC French this offseason, nor when I brought him up for the waiver wire trap segment some weeks ago. I basically blamed French for the huge setback we've seen in Clay Helton's offensive system the last couple of years. And when he did have a solid performance against, you know, Southern Miss a couple of weeks ago, straight up, I didn't want to believe it. I sat there and said, this is a fluke, and he's not going to be a startable option going forward. Well, all he's done is just rip off 3 straight 25-plus fantasy point games, not including that Southern Miss game, so really it's 4 straight. And if you had him starting for your team, he pretty much would have been a super solid anchor for any of teams that would have been struggling at quarterback the last few weeks. So that is my bad. I am sorry, y'all. I misread that situation entirely. I don't know what it is. I don't know whether it's French who's the one who's turned a corner, or the staff has really finally figured out after 2 years of starting him what's the best way to use him, but the recent results have been great. In the last five games, French has seen a consistent 12-plus carries, providing a safe floor in his rushing. That almost always comes with a touchdown on the ground as well. Passing's been a bit more erratic, you know, but he does seem to find fantasy points through the air regardless, right? Barely throw for 200 yards, here's multiple touchdowns for your troubles. Only got 1 touchdown through the air, how about a season-high 353 passing yards, right? Like, he's going to find ways to score, and again, that's what's been great about him the last couple weeks, is that he's going to find a way to 25 fantasy points, some way, somehow. And the best part about all this, though, with French is, especially compared to Daniels, is that if you pick up French as a waiver wire option this week, while Daniels, you got to be a bit more picky and choosy about what you're going to do. French, I could see starting all 3 weeks of my playoff run. Like, look at these upcoming matchups. Coastal Carolina, Old Dominion, Marshall. All three of those are 80th or worse against the run, so I should expect French's rushing floor to remain. Both Coastal Carolina and Marshall are giving up 250-plus passing yards per game. Old Dominion's passing defense is definitely something to worry about, I would say, but their rushing defense is pretty weak. They're 101st in the country, giving up almost a little over 175 yards per game. That should allow Georgia Southern to move the ball and still get those scoring opportunities. So, yeah, all this is adding up for French to have a really solid finish to the season. And again, I owe an apology. I think he could end up being a waiver wire pickup for people that, again, he probably won't win you your week, right? Like, I'm not sitting here expecting him to put up a 40-point performance in any of these 3 weeks. But as I've said before, especially in playoffs, the road to championships are often paved with quarterbacks that can just get you a solid 25 points per week and you don't have to worry about them. Because so many great CFF teams are lost by a quarterback that has been putting up points every single week, suddenly coming out with a huge dud. French could be one of those guys that kind of helps you protect you from that. So, that being said, those are my only two quarterback options, at least my new names that I'm throwing out for this week. Otherwise, there wasn't anybody that really stood out to me. But we can go over some of these honorable mentions here. We can start off with Cameron Brown, quarterback out of Georgia State. Not a great performance this past week. In fact, he got benched for TJ Finley at some point during the game. I think that was a little harsh, but you could really see that Coastal Carolina really honed in on his rushing game. He only had 8 rush attempts for 0 yards. He did get a touchdown still, But again, ended the day with 14 fantasy points, just not very good overall. He does have an opportunity for redemption here, though. Marshall is facing Marshall this week. They're bottom five in the country against the pass. They're 80th plus versus the run. Cameron Brown, I think, has an opportunity to bounce back here. Brock Lowry, mentioned it last week as well. Dude just finds a way to get, 20 plus fantasy points in a week, especially, against MAC competition. He's up against Ohio this week. I think that'll be another rock'em sock'em game between those two schools, so I'm down for that. Jeff Sims, mentioned him last week as a feature. Obviously, he didn't play this past week, but he gets West Virginia this week. They're 66 versus the run, pretty poor versus the pass, so I think Sims is in for a solid week this week. And then Samari Collier might end up being a league winner, man. He is just putting up 30-plus fantasy performances left and right. Once again, did not put together a huge passing day with 120 yards through the air. But bro did find his touchdowns, and he got his run on the ground. Again, 123 yards on the ground and a touchdown. Once again, Collier has come up huge. And Coastal Carolina has a beautiful end of the schedule, starting with Georgia Southern this week, who, by the way, is dead last in the country versus the run. Collier should have another eating day there. And then Fagnano, I talk about it a little bit later with UConn, but they have just been putting up points every single week, 35-plus in each of their last four games. He should be in for another solid week against Air Force this week, who is bottom three versus the pass and bottom 35 versus the run. Yeah. A lot of good quarterback options still out there if you need some help in the playoffs. But let's go over to running backs, which I tease, I would say, is the current strongest position to grab off the waiver wire, at least in terms of these new names that are popping up. And we will start with a guy in Evan Dickens, who I had as an honorable mention last week. But I'm making him a feature guy this week. This past week, 28 rushing attempts, 127 yards, and a touchdown on the ground. No receiving work here. I mentioned him last week because, again, he had that monster game versus Old Dominion. But after that, I had the audacity to list him merely as an honorable mentions, both in my article and the show last week. And like I said, I'm fixing that this week. Dickens has become a serious volume pick. Shout out Justin Leo and volumepicks.com in these final weeks. Like, his performance against Missouri State last week didn't quite live up to that 40 bomb he put up the week before, but the reliance on and the volume for Dickens is only increasing for the Flames as we get later into the season. He posted a season-high 28 carries in this game, which led to 127 yards and a touchdown to go with it. If you're in a PPR league, downside here is that, Dickens' receiving usage is just non-existent in recent weeks, so that this might end up being more of like a standard scoring league play. But again, pure volume-wise, like, this is turning into quite a safe play going forward. If you look at his upcoming weeks, Dickens has some matchups to be, I say, somewhat concerned about, right? I say this because all three of Florida International, LA Tech, and Kennesaw State, his three remaining opponents, are average to above average versus the run, but they are weak against the pass. So, LA Tech and FIU, they're both giving up 260 plus yards to the air. So because of that, there is a world where Liberty, sees their chance at victory to being just throw the ball, right? Like, that's their path to victory rather than trying to run it on these teams, which are, again, average to above average against the run. If that happens, then, Dickens could be in trouble in those games. However, that's not quite the only way to look at this, though. Like, given the volume that we've seen Dickens have the last couple of weeks, this strikes me as a game plan for Liberty going forward. Like, this is just something that they're going to rely on. And if you look at these three opponents, again, I said they're all average to above average versus the run. That's in total rushing yards. Let's take a look at this from a per rush attempt perspective. FIU, they're 4.8 yards per carry allowed. LA Tech, 4.3. Kennesaw State, 4.1. If Liberty commits to getting Dickens 20 plus touches on the ground and can hit those averages, you're looking at a pretty solid floor of 80 plus yards in each game. Probably a touchdown to go along with that. And I would say I'd happily take that floor going through the playoffs. So something to keep in mind with Dickens is his upcoming matchups aren't quite golden, but still pretty solid. Let's talk about another guy here that quite frankly just took me by surprise, and that's Austin Dendy, the running back out of Bowling Green, rostered on 4% of leagues, which, by the way, shout out to the people who grabbed him already, because I'll be real, admittedly, I haven't paid a ton of attention to Bowling Green this year. I don't think a lot of you have either, and that's not a shot at Bowling Green. It's just, you know, there's 136 teams, and I can only watch so many games, right? I did not realize that Bowling Green was housing a secret weapon here in former three-star Missouri transfer Austin Dendy. Dendy did not play for most of this season. During that time, you know, Chris McMillan was kind of a lead back for Bowling Green. He was getting about, you know, 25% of the carries, which was more than the next guy, but, you know, it's pretty much mostly a committee approach for most of the season. All of a sudden, though, Dendy comes in as a redshirt freshman and just starts sucking up all these carries in this backfield. I don't know what kept him out to this point, because, you know, it's hard to find any kind of information from Bowling Green. I don't know if it was injury or the, you know, the coaching staff just not wanting to trust a youth. Whatever it was, Dendy has gotten over it real quick, and he is now a massive part of this Bowling Green attack. Over the last 3 weeks, Dendy has averaged just under 20 carries a game for the Falcons. Production, not elite by any stretch, but, you know, 2+ 90-yard games and 3 touchdowns in that 3-game stretch. That'll make most CFF managers pretty comfortable. Kind of like Dickens, he doesn't get a lot of receiving work at the moment, so that could definitely hinder him. But this past week, he did get 2 catches for 26 yards, so maybe that little bit of production encourages the staff to let Dendy get some more receiving work going into the future. He's already pretty intriguing because of this late season breakout, but his remaining schedule makes him even more enticing. He's got a bye this week. That sucks. But because of that, as well as Bowling Green just not being a great team in general, I was initially hesitant to put Dendy on the waiver recommendations for this week. That was until I saw these remaining opponents. You got Akron and UMass. I'm not sure you can draw up a better, you know, remaining MAC schedule, especially for a running back. Both Akron and UMass are outside the top 90 in run defense, giving up 165 plus on the ground on average. UMass is particularly horrendous. They're giving up 200 plus on the ground. I think those are really, really solid matchups for Dendy here. Even if I have reservations about Bowling Green as a team, Dendy should be able to eat in those matchups. He could be a really, really sneaky add to hide on your bench this upcoming week, especially if you're a team that is on bye and you're waiting to see what happens in another league. Just go ahead and add Dendy and then spring Dendy on your opponents these last 2 weeks of the season and just roll from there. So let's move on. Let's discuss another running back here. This is another guy, like Dickens, that I almost featured last week. I wanted to give it one more week just to make sure that we were seeing what we were seeing, and that is Dior Hubbard, the running back out of West Virginia, rostered on 7% of leagues. The week before against Houston, 29 rush attempts, 108 yards, and a touchdown. I had people asking me, is this the next Ty Edwards? Is this the next Jaheim White? Is this the next Rich Rodriguez RB1? And I said, it's probably, especially if you're in a deeper league, it's probably worth the risk. I picked him up in one league, a best ball league, just in case he popped off this week. I figured the juice was worth the squeeze there. And he did, you know, another 18 fantasy point performance this week. He didn't find the end zone, but his receiving work was really solid this past week against Colorado. 6 targets, 6 catches, 94 yards, a lot of it coming on a 69-yard play down the sideline on a really solid wheel route called there. And yeah, he's looking really solid. Again, RB1 for Rich Rodriguez, that's already super enticing. I will fully admit, though, rest of season here for Hubbard not looking as great as we would want. You get Arizona State this week. Arizona State defense pretty stingy. You know, they're 35th versus the run, giving up just under 130 yards per game. I still think there's some room there for Hubbard to finish with, you know, 90 to 100 yards, if that is the case. So I feel good about that. They're also pretty stingy versus the pass. I'm okay with that. I think if you grab Hubbard this week, you could start him against Arizona State. That's not like a must stop, or excuse me, that's not like a must sit kind of situation. Obviously, then he has a bye in week 13. That's pretty rough. And then championship week, Hubbard has to face Texas Tech, which I know there's some doubters about Texas Tech out there still, but we just got to fully admit that defense for the Red Raiders is legit. They shut down pretty much every team that they have faced so far. And quite frankly, I do not trust Rich Rodriguez or West Virginia to put up some points in that week, championship week. So this is me fully admitting Hubbard is a spot starter this week. If you're struggling greatly at running back, go grab him and work from there. But even if that's the case, this next guy is likely available in more leagues, and he's probably a better spot starter, and that's Antoine Roberts, running back out of Marshall, rostered on 2% of leagues. Y'all remember a couple of weeks ago, Michael Allen was a guy that I was very high on after he was the clear RB1 for Marshall this year, and then he promptly got hurt. We have not seen him since, and Antoine Roberts has quickly climbed up the ladder and is becoming the RB1 for Marshall in his stead. Last couple of weeks, 13 rush attempts, 15 rush attempts, and 20 rush attempts. If you include targets in there as part of his opportunities, he has seen 16, 19, and 21 opportunities per game, or in his last three games there, respectively. And again, he's put up some really solid production for CFF recently. 13.6 versus Texas State, 14.9 versus Coastal Carolina. And then most impressively, in my opinion, 18.5 fantasy points versus JMU. I was really scared about that JMU game for Marshall in general. Turns out we were kind of right for Carlos Del Rio Wilson. But Roberts did pretty solid. Again, 20 carries, 120 yards, so averaging about 6 yards per rush. He's been on fire recently. And I do worry about Michael Allen coming back. But if Allen doesn't come back and Roberts kind of holds on to this RB1 title, good Lord, these next couple of weeks are phenomenal. He gets Georgia State, App State, and Georgia Southern. Georgia Southern and Georgia State are both bottom three in the country versus the run. They're giving up 230-plus yards against the run per game. Even if Allen comes back, I'm not entirely sure that both of those guys couldn't get 100 yards. And then you added Carlos Del Rio Wilson in there. I think all three of them could potentially eat in those games. So I'm not worried in the slightest about those games. I think Roberts, as long as he's getting this volume and doesn't get reverted too harshly if Allen were to come back, he should be able to eat plenty in those upcoming matchups. The App State matchup's a little bit more worrying. They're only giving up about 130 yards per game. They're 40th versus the run. But we saw this past week that OJ Arnold for Georgia Southern, who hasn't been like an elite running back by any stretch, was able to find 100 yards in that game. So App State's defense, while solid versus the run, certainly isn't unstoppable. And so, you know, if you were to feel the need to start Roberts in those weeks, or in that week in particular, the semifinals week, I think you'd still end up being okay. This is a very good pickup, in my opinion. The only thing that's holding me back is the fact that Michael Allen could come back and kind of mess things up from here. But I think the staff would personally be a fool at this point to try to switch things out. Keep riding the guy that's been getting you, that's been helping you out the last couple of weeks, and just go from there. Last running back I'm going to throw out here is literally a throw out here because it's one of those guys where I don't fully trust this because he's had only really one good game for CFF here, and this was his past week. But Jordan Simmons, running back out of Georgia State, we've all been kind of waiting for a potential breakout back here at Georgia State, whether it was Rashad Amos or, you know, Branson Robinson. But, you know, the former Ole Miss and Akron running back here kind of started to kick things off the last couple of weeks. I think it really started not this past week, but 2 weeks before against Southern Alabama, where Jordan Simmons had only 11 carries, but ran for 78 yards in that game. Just was superficial. Wasn't one of those scenarios where he just broke off a long run and was inefficient the rest of the time. He ran for 7.1 yards per carry, but only had a long of 15 yards. That tells me that he was just breaking off chunk after chunk after chunk. And after the bye week, which we do tend to see some of these shifts in, you know, carry percentage, target numbers, stuff like that, a lot of that comes after a bye week. it seems like based on his performance this past week against Coastal Carolina, where he ran 20 rushing attempts for 99 yards and a touchdown, that they seem committed to riding Simmons the rest of this way. And this was in a game where they were trailing early against Coastal Carolina. And so this was a scenario where they're getting him the volume no matter what. It could have very well been a game where game script forced them away from Simmons. And that's just not what they did at all. In fact, it actually helped him a little bit because he got 5 targets, 5 receptions for 25 yards out of this as well. So clearly, when they're in that negative game script, they're totally fine to throw the ball. If this pattern sticks, the next 3 weeks are great matchups for Simmons. Next three matchups, you got Marshall, Troy, Old Dominion. Each one of them gets worse against the run as you go. Marshall, 83rd. Troy, 97th. Old Dominion, 101st. Give me 20 carries against all three of those teams, and I think that Simmons could be a really solid late addition add in every league right now, because he is 0% rostered. This man, nobody counted on this man at all for this season, and so I think you can grab him basically for free in a lot of leagues. I think there'll be a lot of people hesitant to grab a guy with only one good game under his belt. This is one that I'm willing to go out on a limb for. Let's touch on some of these running back honorable mentions. Caleb Comolafay, another great performance from him this past week. 17 rush attempts, 118 yards, and a touchdown. He also had 5 catches for 40 yards. He gets Michigan this week. That's not great, but afterwards he's got some solid production. So maybe don't grab him and start him this week. But after that, you should be good to go. Kehwan Brown going up against Clemson this week. Again, that's another... I trust Louisville running backs, especially ones as efficient as Kehwan Brown. He has proven that he is, I don't want to say he's Isaac Brown by any stretch, but he's proven that he's a really good running back in his own right. Clemson's been solid against the run, but they may not have seen a running back as good as Kehwan Brown. So I think he's startable in that game, especially if, you know, Miller Moss goes off in the passing game. That'll provide some solid scoring opportunities for Kehwan Brown, even if they stuff him on a down-to-down basis. So I think that's a solid spot. Jakarian Turner, running back out of Pittsburgh. He's got Notre Dame this week. Don't love that, especially with Notre Dame's defense playing as well as they have been. But then after that, Pittsburgh's got some ACC matchups there at the end of the season. I forgot to write that down. Who do they face? Nobody that I was super afraid of, but I do want to give the team name. Okay, yeah, they got Georgia Tech. Okay, they got Miami Championship week. That's not fantastic, but we've seen some running backs do decently against Miami. Georgia Tech is a great matchup there in the semifinals. So if nothing else, grab Turner for that. Jordan Brunson out of Miami of Ohio. Again, got a couple of good matchups in the MAC to end the season here. Jordan Gant out of Akron. Phenomenal, phenomenal game this past week against UMass, 28 rush attempts, 153 yards, and 2 touchdowns. He gets Kent State this week, who's 90th versus the run. I smell another good performance from Gant there. And the one name I don't have on the sheet here that I do want to throw out here is O.J. Arnold, running back out of Georgia Southern. I mentioned that French's schedule is pretty solid to end the season, especially against the run. O.J. Arnold this past week, 20 rush attempts for 105 yards, 3 catches for 37 yards. I think that his best days are ahead of us in terms of what he can do rest of season. And so I would say Arnold is probably a sneaky pickup right now that you can get in a lot of leagues where somebody's likely has dropped him at some point this year. Let's move on to wide receivers. Again, we're just going to run through a lot of these honorable mentions first and foremost, because again, a lot of these guys are super solid. Iverson Hooks this past week, they're 12 targets, 6 catches, 89 yards, and a touchdown. You get North Texas this week. They're 9th in the country versus the pass, so you definitely don't love that, but a lot of that has to do with the fact that teams have been so easily able to run on them. North Texas is bottom 5 in the country versus the run. They're top 10 versus the pass. That just tells me that a lot of it comes down to how teams choose to attack North Texas. We've seen some passing attacks like South Florida already take well advantage of North Texas's defense. And so I think that there's still a possibility for Hooks to be solid this week, despite the fact that North Texas's defense doesn't look great on paper. Kyrie Duplessis, another week, another 10-plus target week for him, 78 yards, a touchdown. very safe floor, and he gets a great matchup against Sam Houston this week, who's 124th versus the pass. He should be in for a good time. Parker Kingston, it was a rough one this past week versus Texas Tech, no doubt about that. Still got 10 targets, so we know that BYU is still trying to get him the ball. He gets TCU this week. They're 85th versus the pass. That should be a much more comfortable game for Kingston and BYU. Definitely worth picking up there. Jordan Hudson, again, another week, another 100-yard performance from him. A touchdown to go along with it. He gets Louisville this week. I don't love that matchup, but again, if you're going to give me 8 to 10 targets with a guy on SMU's roster in Rhett Lashley's system, I think he's worth the pickup. Maybe worth only grabbing him for championship week. If I remember correctly, who do they play championship week? They play California. That's a much nicer matchup there for championship week. Sheldon Sampson, good lord, this man was phenomenal this past week. 8 targets, 5 catches, 80 yards, 2 touchdowns. Louisiana's going to continue to feed him. He's off this week, but he comes back next week against Arkansas State. Arkansas State's defense definitely gives up plenty. Sheldon Sampson will be a focal point for the Raging Cajuns going forward. I think you're in for another good week the rest of the season here for Sampson. Amari Thomas, still only rostered in about a third of leagues. I don't know what else he needs to do. He had another great week this past week. 9 targets, 5 catches, 103 yards, and a touchdown. You know, he's off this week, but then he gets TCU the next week. I just mentioned with Parker Kingston. TCU's given up plenty in the past there, so I think he'll be back ready to go for the final 2 weeks of the season there. Nick McMillan, he was off last week, so not really much to add compared to last week, but like I said, he's been the volume guy for Buffalo. The touchdowns are going to come at some point. They get Central Michigan this week. Probably a little bit lower scoring of a game, so I probably don't love this matchup for Buffalo. But regardless, if you're going to give me a guy with 10-plus targets in the MAC, you got to go with him. DJ Williams out of Stanford, rostered still, unrostered in about 3/4 of leagues so far. Unless he's facing an elite defense, he's going to find points, right? This past week against North Carolina, 9 targets, 6 catches, 61 yards, and a touchdown. They get Cal this week. He should be able to find the end zone once again. Jeremy Scott, we discussed last week. Again, we're possibly looking at the new wide receiver one for South Alabama. Again, we're definitely going to find out this week. They get UL Monroe versus the pass. UL Monroe is 122nd. If Scott isn't able to take advantage of this opportunity, then we're likely not going to be able to see him starting the rest of the year. But if you're somebody that you're facing some kind of juggernaut this week and you want to shoot for high upside, Jeremy Scott's probably a good guy to run out there. And last but not least, one of my boys, Braden Pegan, still hanging out here, rostered on 29% of leagues. Not the greatest week this past week with 3 catches, 56 yards, and a touchdown. Have no fear. You get UNLV this week. They're terrible on defense. Pegan should find the end zone once again. So, all that being said, let's discuss some of these wide receivers. And, you know, as I kind of mentioned, I liked the honorable mentions a lot more. But, you know, that doesn't mean that there aren't exciting guys here that are new. It's just, you know, I just don't think they're as strong as previous weeks. So, we'll start with our first guy here, and that is Jacob De Jesus, wide receiver out of Cal. This, you know, I'll save the stat line here for a second, because I don't know about you guys, I never really planned on grabbing a Cal wide receiver this year, let alone one that was transferring up from the G5. I'm just so used to saying G5 Hive now. Justice, Luke, your branding's paying off. That it's just transferring up from the G5. But again, I can't ignore how much the Bears have come to rely on De Jesus. Brian Harsin must have told like Sagapolutele at some point this past week that he needed to find Jesus. I don't know if it was a moment out of frustration or whatever, but clearly Sagapolutele took that to heart, because in this big win over Louisville, De Jesus saw 23 targets, which resulted in 16 catches for 158 yards and a touchdown. Just a gluttonous amount of volume for him this past week. And, you know, obviously not a result or strategy that I think will be repeated going forward, but it does bear mentioning this late in the season. But just because I'm saying he won't see 20 plus targets again this season doesn't mean I don't think this is still a volume play, right? Because in the weeks leading up to this monster game he had this past week, De Jesus saw target numbers of 11, 9, 19, 11, and 7 in the five games leading up to this. This is still a volume play and a really, really good one for PPR leagues. Like, in standard leagues, I'm a little concerned with De Jesus' efficiency. He's seen 10 or less yards per catch in four of his last six games. And even the ones he has gone above hasn't been super great. The one time he went well above 10 yards per catch was the game he had seven targets but only caught the ball twice. So it really just didn't balance out there at all. The good news for De Jesus and people like me that are worrying about his efficiency is that his upcoming matchups should help a ton here. After De Jesus gets past his bye this week, check out these final two matchups. Stanford, SMU. Those two are bottom 10 pass defenses in the country, both of whom are giving up 280 plus yards a game. To me, this is another one of those guys that a lot of people might avoid this week just because he's on bye. If you can stomach it, grab him and get ready to play him the last 2 weeks. Like, if he's going to keep getting this volume and go up against defenses that are this poor versus the pass, De Jesus could be a really, really solid add for your playoff run. Next guy up here, we'll talk about Javon Nicholas. I think I've discussed him in a previous episode, but I couldn't remember if I had already, and quite frankly, I was too lazy to go back and check, so we're going to discuss him again this week if I have discussed him. This past week, 7 targets, 3 catches, 90 yards, and 2 touchdowns, rostered on 6% of leagues. I've been hesitant to really feature Nicholas at this point because I know for a fact I've talked about him at least in the CFF Slack here at Campus Decanton, but I don't think I've ever fully recommended him. But he's been great the last couple of weeks, right? Like, the game against Temple notwithstanding, North Texas, 9 targets, 7 catches, 187 yards, and 2 touchdowns in that game. He also had a big play on the ground for 20 yards. And then this past week, like I said, 7 catches, 3 targets, or, oh my gosh, 7 targets, 3 catches, 90 yards, 2 touchdowns. He's been on a heater. And quite frankly, this Charlotte team has started to kind of figure themselves out, you know, late here in the season. I think having some consistency at quarterback has definitely helped with Grayson Loftus back there after Connor Harrell went down. No more back and forth. Who's the starter? You just sit there, let a guy develop. And that's what Loftus has done. It's helped out Nicholas quite a bit. And the good news is that there's some solid matchups for Nicholas to take advantage of. Obviously, if you're looking at the graphic right now, you see that big power G there in week 13. Yeah, don't start Nicholas versus Georgia in week 13, unless you're a psychopath. You do look at those other two logos there in UTSA and Tulane, and you see a lot of opportunity. UTSA, 91st versus the pass, they're giving up 242 yards per game. Tulane, 113th versus the pass, 250 plus. Those are both very startable spots. Obviously, given Nicholas's kind of up and down nature as the season's gone on, you're kind of hoping that these last 2 weeks aren't, you know, flukish in any way, or they're just not, you know, his high end, and then now these last 3 weeks he's going to go on his low end. I don't know. When I look at what Charlotte's been able to do the last couple of weeks, I'm starting to see some consistency. I'm starting to see some, really just a team kind of settling into their own, and I think Nicholas is a big part of that. Sean Brown, the other wide receiver, has helped them out a lot there as well. But Nicholas has been the more consistent guy, so that's why I'm going to recommend him here. So let's move on to our next wide receiver here, and that is Alex Perry, wide receiver out of Florida International, rostered on 1% of leagues. This past week, 7 targets, 5 catches, 71 yards, and 2 touchdowns against Middle Tennessee State. Perry is a guy that I've kind of been waiting to take off in this FIU offense, really since the start of the season. I drafted him late in a couple of best balls. A couple reasons, you know, there's some hype around him during the offseason. Keon Jenkins really liked his outside wide receivers under the previous coaching staff. And while I certainly can say that we have not taken off to the point of, like, you know, Alex Perry to the moon or anything, I do think we can safely say, you know, he's, you know, cruising at like a commercial airline altitude with these last couple of weeks. nothing flashy, but really is still an integral piece in providing some grunt work for your CFF teams each week. You might be wondering, what the heck do I mean by this? Well, Perry's kind of been consistently getting 6 to 11 targets every game, going back to late September. Enough volume to kind of consistently see some production each week, especially in PPR league, it helps a lot. He's seen 70 plus yards in 3 of his last 4 matchups, and recently has been getting a ton of red zone love. He's seen 3 touchdowns in each of his last 2 games. Excuse me, 3 touchdowns in his last 2 games, not in each of his last 2 games. Let me be very clear about that. He's not scored 6 touchdowns in 2 weeks. 3 touchdowns, 2 games, and when his upcoming schedule includes his final 2 weeks against Jacksonville State and Sam Houston, both of whom are outside the top 100 in passing defense, I see a lot of opportunities for him to keep scoring. Again, if you look at it, if you look at his actual production, you know, 11 fantasy points versus Kennesaw State in half PPR formats, 12.8 versus Missouri State, 21.6 this past week, by no means is Perry a, you know, league or a weekly winner, let alone a league winner. But you know, if you're looking for a guy that's just going to make sure you don't, like, the bottom doesn't fall out on your team or anything like that, I think Perry's a pretty solid start, a spot start, especially, like I said, in those past, in those last 2 weeks with Jacksonville State and Sam Houston. So let's finish up our wide receivers here with Chris Dawn, wide receiver out of Texas State. A lot of love deservedly going to Bo Sparks recently after he was wide receiver 1 on the week this past week, top 5 wide receiver on the year. But his partner in crime, Chris Dawn, is kind of flying under the radar. You know, he's not super high in terms of total fantasy points for this season. He's definitely had some dud games. I mean, 2 weeks ago he had, what, 1.6 fantasy points versus James Madison there. But around that, really, since week 7 on, he's been pretty dang solid. I wish I had the numbers to give you his actual position over the last several weeks, but half PPR formats, 15.4 fantasy points, 20.3 fantasy points versus Marshall, obviously the huge dud against James Madison, but then this past week against Louisiana Lafayette, 18.4 fantasy points. Just solid all around, especially as defenses start to key in on Bo Sparks. I do think that Chris Dawn will end up being a big piece for them moving forward to kind of give a secondary option for Brad Jackson. And when you look at the remaining schedule here for Chris Dawn, 87th versus the pass is Southern Miss. UL Monroe, we discussed them earlier, they're 122nd versus the pass. The only one that's slightly worrying is South Alabama. They're 26th versus the pass, but they're also 120th versus the run. So could very well be that teams, kind of similar to some of the other defenses we discussed today, very much could just be choosing to run against South Alabama, and that's what's making South Alabama's passing defense look better. I think it's going to be a shootout game regardless, and if that's the case, then Dawn should be able to get some pretty solid production in that game as well. Again, you can kind of hear in the way I'm talking about these wide receivers, these new ones this week, none of them, to me, really, maybe De Jesus in a PPR league is pretty much must grab, but the rest of these guys are not really anybody that I love. Again, go back and take a look at those honorable mentions as well. I think I like pretty much all those guys over the new guys this week. So, but again, plenty of wide receivers to pick up this week if you're still struggling at that position. So, let's finish up with tight end. I do have a tight end to discuss this week, and that has to be Mr. Juice Vereen, tight end out of UConn, rostered on 11% of leagues. My inclusion of Juice Vereen has to make Ethan Sowers smiling ear to ear, because he and many others were not wrong when it came to Juice Vereen. They were just very early. When Vereen first transferred to UConn, he was entering a room kind of filled with some pretty established guys already, like Alex Hoenig and Lewis Hansen. To me, the projection for him to start was going to be a tough one to make, right? Like, again, you got 2 very established guys there. However, this second half of season, he's really climbed that depth chart very quickly and has become a heavily needed secondary passing option for UConn to kind of keep defenses from keying in on Skylar Bell. He's been on a heater recently, scoring 5 touchdowns in 4 games. Again, it helps that UConn's just kind of putting up 35 points a game recently, and that, you know, they make sure to get all their stars a touchdown pretty much every single game. It's like when you play, I don't know about you guys, but like when I play NCAA or Madden or whatever, and I got these dynasty teams, and I try to spread the wealth with my touchdowns as much as possible sometimes, especially when I got a lot of different players that I like. I'm like, all right, we're going for touchdown number 5. Has running back gotten a touchdown yet? No, we'll make sure to get him one. That's pretty much how UConn's been playing the last couple of weeks, because you can pretty much bet that Skylar Bell, Juice Vereen, and Cam Edwards are going to score a touchdown each week, right? And that's the good news with Vereen. He really does seem like he's kind of joined that star club along with Bell and Edwards. And like I said, just absolute heater. Since week 7, Vereen's been a top 3 tight end in all of CFF. That's beating out guys like Michael Trigg, Dorian Thomas, Mason Minnie, guys we've been relying on all season. Vereen's been outscoring them really the last like 4 or 5 weeks. It's just been absolutely insane what he's been doing. And as long as UConn continues to score, Vereen will keep scoring as well, it seems. Like, it really does help as well that these last 2 matchups, he's got Air Force, Florida Atlantic. Those are 2 defenses that I don't really see a path to UConn not putting up 35 points a game in those 2 matchups. So once again, I think that means that Vereen will score at some point during those games. The only downside to Vereen, though, is that the UConn team will be getting a bye on week 14, which is just so, so unfortunate. So before we finish up with waiver wires, let me just throw out a couple more tight ends for those of you that are still looking. Shimon Mateyer, tight end of Arizona State, still rostered in only a third of leagues. He should be rostered more, in my opinion, because if Jordan Tyson is unfortunately out for the rest of the season, no confirmation, just to be clear, just rumors and speculation, Mateyer will be a big part of that passing game going forward. Bowden Green, out of Kansas, he has been great. He's top 15 on the year for tight ends. Peter Clark out of Temple has been pretty solid once again. And then, you know, Rohan Jones. I don't like it, but dude just scores touchdown and makes big plays, even if he only has to rely on 2 to 3 targets a game. I don't like relying on it, but it is what it is. So let's finish up with a couple of DSC streaming options for this week. Again, these are in order of what percentage rostership they have, not necessarily in order of the, you know, confidence I have in them. And I really say that because I start off with Texas A&M here, rostered on 18% of leagues. They go against South Carolina this week. On paper, I think this is a pretty solid matchup for Texas A&M against South Carolina. That offense has just not been together at all this season, to the point that Mike Shula has been one of the few offensive coordinators that has been fired midseason. But that's kind of the thing that makes me worry a little bit is, do we see a Auburn Hugh Freeze effect here, where whoever the interim offensive coordinator is for South Carolina, which I'm curious, actually, I should have looked this up. Who is the interim off? Mike Furry. Who is Mike Furry? Y'all gonna see me do. I recognize that name. I'm like forgetting off the top of my head. Is he called plays before? No, he's the wide receivers coach. Yeah, he's only been a wide receivers coach. Okay. Thought he had called plays before. Anyway, regardless, that turns this into a complete unknown. So yeah, I'm gonna throw Texas A&M out there. It's my least confident one. You could easily just as go for Kentucky, who's facing an FCS team this week. Kentucky's a lot of things. They're not gonna be a team that gives up a ton of points to an FCS team. Northern Illinois facing UMass this week. Northern Illinois has, you know, that defense has proven fraudulent at times this year, but it usually comes against really good offenses. And UMass, God bless them, that offense ain't good. That offense is, in fact, one of the worst in the country. And so I think Northern Illinois could easily hold UMass under 10 points in this game. You can pick them up pretty much in almost every league. And then Wake Forest. This is one that really kind of shocks me, because Wake Forest, man, their defense and special teams has been really, really solid, and they're still only 1% rostered in most leagues. But, like, let's take a look at their last couple of weeks. Again, outside of the Florida State game where they just got absolutely trounced, Virginia held to 9 points. SMU held to 12 points. Oregon State, they held them to 14 points. Like, the last several weeks, this Wake Forest defense has been pretty solid. They get North Carolina this week. That's an offense that I'm not particularly deathly afraid of. I think this will be a low-scoring matchup between Wake Forest and North Carolina. Very defensive battle. And so I think that that's a pretty solid matchup. Honestly, I forgot to look. Does North Carolina under 30% their DST? They are. That might be a pretty solid DST option as well, because I really could see this Wake Forest UNC game ending in the team. So, with that, we have come to the end of our show. Appreciate all of you guys for listening. If you have not already, make sure you leave a like, a comment, and subscribe. If you're watching this on the YouTube side of things, if you're on the podcast side of things, make sure you follow the show, leave a 5-star review wherever you can. Make sure you check out the rest of the Campus of Canton Podcast Network for shows ranging on pretty much anything you can think of related to the college fantasy game. We'll see you guys on Tuesday night, where I'm sure there's going to be plenty of you that are going to be very desperate for some start sick questions, and I will be here to help answer them. Until then, really appreciate you guys and hope you guys have a wonderful and blessed week. See y'all.